You may know him as the Minister of Culture in The Plain Dealer. Maybe you know him as former Browns beat reporter Chuck Heaton's son or TV star Patricia Heaton's brother. But once you read Michael Heaton's new book, Truth and Justice for Fun and Profit, you will know Michael Heaton in a new way. The book is a collection of about 40 Heaton articles dating back to 1983. As you will hear, Heaton chose these particular articles for their intensity. They each have an almost cinematic quality to them. In this interview, Michael Heaton discusses some of the wide and wild variety of characters he wrote about and some of the riveting stories that he covered. You'll hear his thoughts about modern-day journalism, blogs and the future of newspapers and the state of Cleveland, and how some very expensive beers led to his friendship with Joe Esterhaus, who wrote the foreword to this book. Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show. Today we're speaking with Michael Heaton, the Minister of Culture from The Plain Dealer. Michael has a new book out. It's called Truth and Justice for Fun and Profit, a collected reporting. You know, and I have to admit, Michael, I was surprised. I was expecting a collection of maybe light and witty commentaries a la the Minister of Culture columns in The Plain Dealer Friday magazine. But the book's a collection of about 40 or so feature-length articles, some from the late lamented Sunday magazine, that have covered some serious topics and some are pretty intense. How did you pick these topics?
You nailed it there, because that's exactly right. I went for the most intense stuff, and it's the stuff that has stuck out in my mind over the years. Every one of those stories in there has stories behind the stories, and they don't come along every week, but every year you get a couple stories like that that are just full of that high narrative drama.
They really are deep. You know, as I was reading them, I was thinking some of these would be great TV shows or movies. Have you had any thoughts of like translating some of these onto the screen?
I'd love to have them all made into movies. Sure. That would be great. A lot of people have mentioned that they have. I mean, and that's another reason why they were chosen. Those were stories that I thought really had a cinematic quality to them. Yeah, I would love to have any of those. A couple of those have been the rights to my sister's production company have the rights to a couple of those, looking towards doing a TV show or doing a movie.
Now, that'd be great. And speaking of movies, Joe Esterhaus wrote the foreword of the book. How did you hook up with him?
Joe and I go back a ways now. He had called me one time out of the blue and said, "Hey, I had heard that you and I should meet, that we would get along." And he says, "I'm going to be in Cleveland over the weekend, so come and meet me at the Ritz at 9 o'clock for a drink." So I show up at the appointed time at the bar at the Ritz, and 10 minutes go by, 20 minutes go by. Meanwhile, I'm buying these $9 beers at the Ritz, waiting for him, and he never shows. So he's into me for about $35 worth of beer. I went back and wrote a column in the Minister column saying that the guy had stood me up, and his lawyer, who lives in Cleveland, called him in L.A. and said, "Did you stand up Michael Heaton?" He goes, "Yeah, how'd you know that?" And he says, "He wrote a column about it, So we've been kind of messing with each other ever since. We eventually did get together, and I've wound up writing a lot of stories about him, and so this was my chance to get him to do a little heavy lifting for me.
Yeah, those $9 beers, that adds up fast. It's $6.50 at the Browns Stadium or something. That's just crazy. Most people, probably lay people, not journalists or in the media, probably don't read the byline of a newspaper article unless, there's a columnist picture or something like that. And you've been doing this intense stuff and general reporting and all that, plus the Minister of Culture stuff. Do you have a preference, the more real-world stuff or the culture, or doesn't it matter?
I find that I really like the trade-off. I like being able to do something short and sweet once a week while keeping something long going like once a month. And so it's nice to do, do something short and then do something long and sort of just trade off like that. It's a nice way to flex different kinds of muscles.
The Cleveland connection in the book adds a lot of fun for us locals. It's like reading some of the Les Roberts stuff where the police department on Payne Avenue and all, it just adds some fun. Especially when you throw in some of these names of characters like Squeaky Hilo or Danny Green, Big Jim Butler, Michael Miller, people that I actually knew when I'm reading it. I think people on the coast might be surprised that we have some of these characters here in little old Cleveland. Is that the impression you might get?
Yeah, I think that this is, people from Cleveland will enjoy this book because of the familiarity. We have every kind of a Clevelander you can imagine, from from crooks and bad guys to, crime fighters like Brendan Sheehan to, people that do great things and people that do not so great things. But I think this book would also appeal to somebody who's never been here, and I think they'd be surprised to find out the wide variety and wild variety of people we have around here.
And, I think it's going to shock some Clevelanders, too. They'll say, this can't be going on in my city. The Gates Mills kid on being a heroin addict, and the gypsies and the stalkers and the con artists and all. Was it hard to find this kind of activity, or do the people who just commute in and or come to the warehouse district on the weekends, they're just not seeing it?
Well, I just think that these kind of people are everywhere you go in life. And Cleveland's no different from New York City, Chicago, L.A., Miami. Anytime you have a big city, you're going to have a full wide range of these kinds of characters. Cleveland's no different from any other big city. That's why I'm kind of proud of it. That's why I'm also proud of the book.
Yeah, well, I think you should be. I mean, in particular, that piece on the old theatrical was great. And how?
I had a lot of fun with that. And you know who always told me that was his favorite piece that I've written? Nem Chandler. Always used to tell me he loved that piece. That was near and dear to his heart, the late sportscaster.
Well, speaking of Chandler, I mean, it's in the style of Raymond Chandler, Philip Marlowe.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, that was really fun. I mean, they've really allowed me here at the Plain Dealer to write all kinds of styles of journalism, and that is probably the most innovative one, where it blends fiction and nonfiction together.
And I found myself jumping to the end of a lot of the articles to see the date. They're not in chronological order. They're grouped in five sections, and it starts, I think, in 1983 to the 2007. How do you think Cleveland has changed in that time?
Well, it's changed a lot in some ways, and in other ways it hasn't changed at all. If you read the story about the East Side versus the West Side,
yeah,
I think you still find a lot of those same stereotypes and prejudices in Cleveland. I think the organized crime no longer has a presence in Cleveland as it once did, during the Anthony Del Monte story. I think there's good things and bad things. I think we're in a rough period right now financially, but I thought it was interesting that, this is a story about Frank Jackson when he was a first-year councilman in the city's poorest ward, and here now the guy is mayor. I'm just hopeful that he can help us get through this sort of downswing we're on right now.
That 92 article you wrote on Frank Jackson was one of my favorites in the book. I mean, that gave an insight to Jackson that I haven't seen. We've seen this guy who seems kind of, not wishy-washy, but not a real decisive or firm guy, and you showed him as a councilman out there patrolling the streets and really dedicated to his ward, and I think that could be campaign material for the guy. It was so well written.
Yeah, I ran into him a couple weeks ago, and I told him that he's telling me that people still stop him and mention that article to him, so that was a real nice compliment to hear from him.
And you include profiles of a lot of really interesting people, Harvey Pekar, Gary Collins is in there, Michael Simon, the new Iron Chef, Casey Coleman, lots of great stories. Do you have any favorites or any that really stand out?
So one of my favorites is that one called In the Line of Fire and In the Line of Journalism. It was about a friend of mine, Michael Laughlin, who got shot in Haiti when he was covering a political protest parade in Port-au-Prince. He and I we had covered the 97 World Series together down in Miami, and so that's why I recognized his name when I'd heard over the AP wire that he had been shot. And I think I just that story for me, kind of the style of the story, we call it a tick-tock, because it just goes through every hour of that day, and it's just so intense. And one of the good things, it's too bad the photograph that ran with that story couldn't be in the book, because the entire time he was going through that ordeal where snipers were bearing down on him, he was surrounded by photographers, so we had photographs of every minute of that day of him trying to escape from the snipers. And it made for an excellent package. I still think it reads very well, too, though.
Yeah, it does. It's really powerful. And you had a kind of a George Plimpton thing yourself there, climbing into the boxing ring and all. What prompted that?
That was my very first story. I had just moved to New York, and I knew I wasn't a good enough writer to get anything published on the basis of my skills, because I didn't have any at that point. I was just a very beginning green, you know, writer. So I thought I'd have to do something really crazy to get the attention of an editor. And so that was it. I just signed up and followed through and got in the ring and did that. And luckily, the then Sunday Magazine editor was Tom Farron, and he thought it was quite funny, and so that was my first published piece ever.
In the book you write, the two things that prepared me most for journalism were hitchhiking and sneaking into rock concerts. How's that?
Well, the hitchhiking, when I grew up in Bay Village, and I went to high school at St. Ed's, and so we would, you save your bus money by hitchhiking back and forth. And one of the things that I learned is that if I could get people interested in a conversation, they would be a lot more likely to take me where I wanted to go than to just drop me off at any corner. So, I mean, basically, that's what journalism is about. It's sitting down and talking to people and getting to tell them your story, tell you their stories. And people love to talk about themselves, and they love to convey, you know, what goes on in their lives and how they feel about this thing and that thing and how what made them who they are. And that's really what, you know, to have an interest in other people is one of the main rules of journalism. And the thing about sneaking into rock concerts is there's a lot of times where, you know, the information you need is in a place where somebody doesn't want you to be, and you have to find a way to get there and get the information. So it's just always that kind of spirit of sneaking in places to get what you're not with, somebody doesn't want you to have. You got to kind of have that adventurous spirit.
You know, it seems that the media has been hit on by all sides pretty much in the last few years, and journalism's almost it's lost some of the respect to some people, ranks lower than used car salesmen in some studies. What happened? Should it be losing this respect? Is it just a few bad apples? Is it how society has changed? What do you think the story is?
I hope that this book could alert people to the fact of how good journalism can be and what purpose it serves. And, you know, through good reporting and good writing, this book represents, I think, newspapers at its best, and I hope it reminds people how important they are and how instructive they can be, how entertaining they can be. I just hope that this book points out all the various positive aspects of having a good, strong newspaper in your town, and I hope it also highlights, you know, all the people who do this kind of work.
You know, on the other hand, you have a blog now. You announced it a few weeks ago with that major statement, I have a blog.
I have a blog, and I don't know what the hell to do with it.
Do you think newspapers are going to they're going to be around in 10, 15 years, or is it all going to be online?
They'll be around. There's always room. You know, TV didn't replace radio. You know, satellite radio didn't get rid of land radio. There's room for all these kinds of things. We're just going to start doing more and different kinds of things. It's just like over the weekend, last night I covered the Michael Simon Iron Chef thing from his restaurant. So you can read that story in the paper. You can read that story at Cleveland.com. And you can also go to Cleveland.com and see a video of last night, because we had a videographer there. So now, you know, newspapers are starting to come after the TV stations, because we're doing now what they've always done for years. So I would say that really local TV has more to worry about than local newspapers.
If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you know that I read a lot of books, and this is one of those. It sounds like a cliche, and it is, but this book is like one of those bags of pistachio nuts. You know, you'll keep dipping in for just one more story, and all of a sudden you're done with a section and get to the end, and you're looking for more. It's really a well-written book.
No calories.
Yeah, no calories. That's helpful. Be sure to click on the links here for the written review. See, we cover you both ways here, too. Now, when I saw you at the book launch party, you were saying how it was a good week for the whole family. Tell us about that.
Well, my sister has a new television show on Fox called Back to You with Kelsey Grammer, and that's Wednesdays at 8 o'clock if the writer's strike ever ends. She's out on the picket line right now. She'll probably be calling to borrow some money from me anytime. And my dad also has a book out. It's called the Cleveland Browns Scrapbook, and it's my dad's his Browns Memories columns from the last couple of years before he retired. My dad turned 90 last Monday, and these are stories from the golden age of sports when he was the Browns beat writer.
Well, I'm reading that book right now. I've got about a third of the way through, and it reminded me just what a great writer Chuck Heaton was. So, but right now, listeners, there's a great book out there, Truth and Justice for Fun and Profit, Collected Reporting of Michael Heaton. That's who we're speaking with today. Be sure to check it out. You're going to find, just like with me, you're going to read story after story, and it's going to blow you away. Thanks for talking to us today, and keep it coming.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.